get into a real estate of mind right here with Think Realty Radio, hosted by Abhi Goldhawk. Breaking down the latest market news, tips, and strategies, Abhi Goldhawk is nationally recognized for his real estate expertise. It's only on Think Realty Radio, and it starts right now.
Think Realty Nation, it's your host, Abhi Goldhawk. Welcome to the show. Really excited today. I have one of my really good friends and mentors, and also an expert in the real estate industry, all things turnkey, all things real estate, all things passive cash flow. His name is Marco Santarelli. You can find him at NaradaRealEstate.com. Check him out. He has an awesome blog. He has an awesome podcast. He has properties all over the country in very specific markets that he knows really well. And I'm excited to talk with him today about how you, the listener, you might be considering about investing in real estate, and you might be considering of doing it out of state, and how you can do that and the steps that you can take to make it a good experience for yourself. Marco, welcome to the show.
Abhi, it's great to be back on the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. How are things in California?
Things are warm, sunny, and, you know, that's why we pay the high taxes, is for that sunshine, right?
Hey, you know what? That's why I should just move in with you in California. Well, I'll help you pay part of that tax. That's not a problem. I'd love to live there part-time. Maybe like an Airbnb. A part-time situation. I don't know. We'll figure that out. But tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what NaradaRealEstate.com is.
Yeah. So I consider myself an investor in general, but a real estate investor specifically. I like to create great content, video, audio, podcast, articles, coming out with a new book here shortly. It's overdue, actually. And I run a great business. It's our 15-year anniversary this month. So we've been helping... Yeah, thanks. Yeah, we've been helping literally hundreds upon hundreds of investors over the years create wealth and passive income through real estate. And that just means specifically turnkey real estate, where they can walk in, close escrow, and cash flow from day one and build their wealth over time. So that's my story.
How did you get started with all of this? Because it seems like turnkey is a conversation that a lot of folks are having, but it's not like it can. It's very difficult to get right. You've been able to perfect it, and you're able to help investors like me understand the markets that you're in. But what inspired you to get into this specific business in the first place?
Yeah, that's a good question, and the answer to that question forms a good segue into the topic of today, and that's really, how do you invest out of state or out of your local area? And some people refer to it as long-distance real estate investing, but it's all one and the same. It's basically anytime you invest outside your backyard into another market, whether it's an hour away or 1,000 miles away, you're essentially investing long-distance. And that's neither a good or a bad thing. It's neither here nor there. It's really all about what is it you're investing in, and where is it, and why does it make sense, you know, objectively, not emotionally. But to answer your question, I built this because I was the guinea pig, if you will. I was the one investing from Southern California in markets such as Georgia, Florida, Michigan, and Memphis, and other places from, you know, 1,000 to 3,000 miles away, depending on what market we're talking about. I did that, and many of those properties I bought over the years were and still are sight unseen, meaning I've never placed my own eyes on them. I've obviously had inspections done and looked at photos and maybe videos and worked with my team in each market. And of course, I've made my fair share of mistakes. You know, I wasn't perfect. I didn't do this right from the beginning when I started investing in late 2003. But through a process of trial and error and educating myself, which I'm very big on, I did it. I became not successful right from the get-go, but I had my hits and misses, and I perfected the model, and that model became the business. So not only was I investing myself personally and building my own portfolio and tripping and falling and getting up and brushing my my shoulders off and moving forward, I turned that into a business that was replicatable for other people. And so technically speaking, I wasn't the first provider of turnkey rental properties in the nation on a nationwide basis. I was really the second. The first company kind of is a shell of itself. They're more or less not around anymore, but I just thought, and my intent, by the way, was not to copy their business. Mm. I didn't even think about it. The reason that happened is because I was buying so many properties in 2004 from a long distance. Investors were coming to me that were going to seminars and saying, "Hey, can I have a coach? Can you mentor me? Hold my hand, whatever it may be." And I basically said, "I'm sorry, no, I don't have time for that. But I do look at a lot of deals and I'm happy to share them with you." And so the sharing became a business. And then, we got compensated like a real estate brokerage, because I am a real estate broker on the back end. And that's how the model came to be.
Interesting. I love that story. So from what I understand, it's organic. You wanted to provide value. You saw a need in the marketplace, and boom, Narada was born. And how did you come up with the name Narada? Just out of curiosity, I don't think I've ever asked you these questions, quite frankly. I always go to NaradaRealEstate.com, and I'll download the market reports and all these things, and I'll look at your properties. But I'm like, how did you come up with that name?
Well, do you like the name?
Yeah.
Let me start with that.
I love the name. I love the name.
Okay. There was a reason I asked you that question, and you wouldn't be asking me this question anyway if there wasn't something about the name that made you ask the question. The funny thing is I asked the exact same question of someone else many, many, many years ago. I want to say almost 25 years ago, there was a company that actually there still is, but they're going under different brand labels right now. But there was a company called Narada Corp. And my business partner and I at the time, we met with the owners of the company because we were looking to do a strategic alliance with them. And I asked them the exact same question. I said, "I'm just curious," because I was, "What does Narada mean, or how did you come up with that name?" It was just something about it subconsciously that was prompting me to ask. And I'm glad I asked, because I get asked this question from time to time, like you asked me today. And the answer to the question was this: they needed a name for their company. They were having a hard time coming up with something that they liked, so they created a list of 100 names, potential names. Mm-hmm. And then they submitted that list of 100 potential names to some sort of psychological review. It was, I don't know what the service is or was, but they basically wanted to find out what was the psychological impact or the impactfulness of the names on that list. And Narada, I'm not sure if it's pronounced Narada or Narada, regardless of what it is, It came out on the top of that list. It was number one out of 100 potential names.
Wow.
And I thought that story was so intriguing that I never forgot it. And then when I needed a name for my business, everything I was looking for was unavailable. The domain name was taken. And so I thought, okay, what about Narada? And I'll put real estate investments after it, And I thought, okay, domain name's available. It's brandable. I think that's the winner.
Interesting. So the next company that I come up with, it's going to be Marco's Real Estate Investments. Okay. Just letting you know. just letting you know. I like it. So we have another minute or so. Actually, less than that. We have about 20 seconds before we have to go to break. I'd like to frame up the rest of the show for our listeners. One, I want to really, really, really hone in on what does long distance investing in real estate mean, right? It's really tough to do if you don't know how to do it right. So the elements of that, finding the property, property management, what the numbers are, what markets you should be looking at, and then, of course, what team members do you need to make this happen? And then at the end of the day, how do you wrap it all together with the right logistics and the right execution strategy? So these topics and more are coming up in today's show with my buddy Marco Santarelli from NaradaRealEstate.com. Check him out. Got questions for me? Head on over to ThinkRealtyRadio.com. You can also follow me anywhere online at Avi Goldhar. Stalk me. I promise you'll like it. I'll be right back. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more Think Realty Radio with Abhi Golhar after these messages. Attention real estate investors. Join the nation's top pros in residential and commercial investing in Baltimore at the Think Realty Conference and Expo, April 6th and 7th. Network with industry leaders and service providers and learn how to earn a higher return on your real estate investments. The Think Realty Conference and Expo in Baltimore, April 6th and 7th. Text radio to 96270. That's radio to 96270. Or visit thinkrealty.com/Baltimore to register.
You have to play the percentages when you invest in real estate. Win the percentage game with Angel Oak Prime Bridge. Whether it's fix and flips as low as 8% or landlord financing starting at 5.5%, Angel Oak Prime Bridge wins with a customer-focused approach to your business. Go to aopbconnect.com to see how you can win at the percentage game with Angel Oak Prime Bridge. And introducing our new wholesale partner program available at aopbconnect.com. The secret to winning at the percentage game.
Hi, Kevin Ortner here, CEO of Renters Warehouse. I'm guessing that many of you might be considering a move. Maybe you need to relocate, maybe you're combining households, or maybe you already own investment property. Whether you have one home or a whole portfolio, my expert team at Renters Warehouse can help you perfectly price your property and rent it out fast, easy, and worry-free in just 17 days on average. For one low flat monthly fee, our professional landlords will manage your property 24/7. We collect the rent, we handle maintenance requests, inspections, all that regulatory red tape, and will even warranty our tenants for up to 18 months. That means if your tenant doesn't stay for any reason, Renters Warehouse will replace them for free. There's no upfront fees, no binding contracts, and you can cancel at any time. Go to renterswarehouse.com right now to book a free home rental price analysis and see what your home will rent for today. A professional landlord will visit your property and show you personally how to rent your home fast and for top dollar.
Find out how much your home.
Back with Think Realty Radio and your host and realty dealmaker, Abhi Golhar.
Think Realty Nation, it's Abhi Golhar. We're back. You're listening to Think Realty Radio. My guest today is Marco Santarelli of NaradaRealEstate.com. He has a lot of experience understanding the minds of real estate investors, specifically those that are seeking cash flow with single-family rentals, and specifically those that want to know how to invest long distance. He lives in California, and I'm sure, Marco, you have a lot of clients and a lot of folks in California always coming up to you and saying, Marco, how do you invest long distance? And that's only, of course, after you respond, Paulo. So really, I tried. That didn't wasn't much of a response.
Good try.
Yeah, I'll try again next year. So what are some of the initial considerations when an investor looks to invest long distance?
Well, the first thing to understand, and this is kind of a real estate investing myth, is there's no such thing as a national real estate market. And many have heard this before, but many more have not come to realize that when people talk about real estate, how's the real estate market, they have to be referring to a local market, a very specific, sometimes even hyper-local, where you're talking about a suburb of a major market. And when you listen to the media, whether it's radio or TV, they always talk about, you know, real estate or the housing market, especially on CNBC. You know, they're always talking about the national real estate market. They won't refer to it as national real estate market. They just talk about real estate in general. The problem with that is that you can't point your finger to the national real estate market. It doesn't exist. There's no such thing. All real estate is local. And you know, that's a phrase that should be tattooed on people's forearms, because every real estate market has its own local politics, its own zoning laws, its own changes and political, you know, push and pulls. It has its own local economy. It has its own supply and demand drivers. It has its own employers that may come and go. It has its own local business environment that can, you know, bring more business in and create more jobs or push them away. And we see that happening in states like California, New York, where, you know, businesses and corporations move to other states like Texas, where, you know, it's a much friendlier business environment. And so you got to look at those things first. And those are macroeconomic related, if you will. They're big picture items, but they help drive your decision, because if you're investing anywhere and you're trying to decide on what market to invest in, you have to take a top-down approach, kind of like a funnel. You're going to start with the market in general. And then once you've decided on the market, then you start looking at submarkets and neighborhoods within that market. And then and only then do you work with your team and you start looking at properties specific in that market. A lot of investors make the mistake of doing it the other way around. In fact, they don't even do it in reverse. They just pick a market because they've heard or read somewhere that, you know, that's a good market or a quote unquote hot market. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They start looking at properties, whether it be on, you know, LoopNet or, you know, Craigslist or on the MLS or wherever it may be. And now they're hyper-focused on a property and they're not taking into consideration the neighborhood and the dynamics of that neighborhood and what's going on, you know, in the greater area and the market itself. So you have to throw this national real estate market concept out the window. That's the starting point with this all.
So obviously, like you said, there's a lot of media attention around the hottest markets in 2019. And a lot of investors will look at these long lists and say, all right, I'm just going to pick a couple because it's a list and it's written by a reputable source. But that isn't necessarily the case, or that's not the way that we should be looking at things. I know NaradaRealEstate.com, you guys have a lot of awesome relationships around the country with preferred providers for cash flowing properties. How do you pick your markets? And then how do you know what to go for?
I had a magazine ask me to write an article for them years ago, and they asked me to write an article on the top, the hot real estate markets. I don't remember how they phrased it, but they wanted an article on the top 10 hottest markets. And I said, well, can you define hot for me? And there was, the silence, mm-hmm. because they really didn't know how to answer that question. Because you can define a hot market in terms of its rate of appreciation, its forecasted rate of appreciation, its historic rate of appreciation, how well that market performs in terms of cash flow, therefore rates of return. You can say a market is hot because it's bringing in a lot of jobs, a lot of employers and jobs and creating jobs. So it's hot for people who are looking for employment. I mean, you really have to define what hot means. So when you ask me, you know, how do I pick a market? Generally speaking, it's this. I look for a market that has, number one, a stable housing market, meaning that we don't see a huge imbalance between supply and demand. In other words, it doesn't have to be balanced. Real estate's never balanced. It's never in a state of equilibrium. So it's like a pendulum of a clock. It's swinging one way or another, but it's always moving. But it has to have stability in terms of supply and demand. And then the other thing you want to see is that there is a stable base of jobs, and ideally you want to see job growth. It doesn't have to have job growth, but that is an ingredient that gives you a stable market. And so tied to that, this is another separate factor, but it's tied to employment, and that is population growth. Is the population growing or is it shrinking? If it's growing, that is a great, great sign, because that means there's going to be demand now and in the future for housing, whether it be rental housing or be sales. But if you have a shrinking population, if it's significant enough, what you're going to find over time is that people are moving out and away, and it's going to soften the market and could create, you know, other problems like, you know, a diminished rental pool or decreasing prices.
So if I'm looking at, let's say I do a Google search, right? I do a Google search on news in Indianapolis, Indiana. What are some headlines that would encourage me or make me believe that Indianapolis is a good market? You mentioned strong job growth. So for example, XYZ company moving to Indianapolis or expanding to Indianapolis and adding 5,000 new jobs. Is that kind of what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, those are one of the things that you definitely want to look out for is just a trend. I like to look for trends. One news article is good, but if it's the only one and you can't find anything else, you know, that may not be a trend. It might just be like a one-off thing. But if you see a trend of employment growth, like employers, business starts than business closures, you know, permits being issued, and this applies to the housing market too. If you see more building permits being issued or a growing trend of building permits being applied for and issued in terms of housing, that's a good sign. Now, of course, you can't take that to an extreme because, you know, whenever you see a top in a market, and usually that's hindsight, it's like 6 months later or sometimes even 9 or 12 months later, you'll always see this glut of permits that have been pulled because it takes time to apply and get those permits. And we've seen that in places like Miami, you know, where there was this huge housing build and then a housing bust. And that's because the market was overbuilt. There was a lot of speculation going on there. But generally speaking, you want to see a good trend in housing permits and growth in terms of the housing market on the supply side.
So. Got it. I do want to talk about some additional factors and maybe how some of this stuff can be a little confusing because we're talking about a lot of data points here. And paralysis of analysis is definitely something to pay attention to. It can inhibit us from making decisions. So we got to go to break. We'll talk about that more with Marco Santorelli from Nerada Real Estate when we come back. If you have questions, go to thinkrealtyradio.com and ask them. See you in a sec.
We'll be right back with more Think Realty Radio with Abhi Golhar after these messages.
National Real Estate Insurance Group is the industry leader in providing coverage customized for investors. We insure occupied, vacant, and renovation properties across all 50 states, can combine all properties on one schedule, and offer convenient pay-as-you-go monthly billing. Visit NREIG.com today for your free custom proposal. That's National Real Estate Insurance Group at NREIG.com or call 888-741-8454, 888-741-8454.
Where are successful investors turning for the latest news, trends, and insights in real estate? Think Realty Magazine. Sign up for your investor-level membership at thinkrealty.com today to start receiving Think Realty Magazine delivered to your door and inbox every month. Boost your competitive advantage with news from the nation's leading investors, market updates, the hottest investment strategies, and more. Take the next step toward building more wealth. Sign up today at thinkrealty.com.
Need a fast, reliable decision-making tool in today's real estate landscape? RentFacts combines real estate expertise and data to deliver decision-making tools for real estate pros. Investors, lenders, or property managers, RentFacts can determine rents and reliability of income for specific neighborhoods, forecast gross and net income in seconds. Find out how RentFacts can predict and compare how demographics, economics, crime, and other location factors affect the stability of your rental with a risk score. Go to RentFactsPro.com. RentFactsPro.com.
Savvy investors make use of smart savings. Think Realty Radio listeners, you have the opportunity to save smart with Sherwin-Williams Paint. Sign up for your free Think Realty membership now and activate discounts to save up to 50% off of select Sherwin-Williams Paint. Rehabbers, investors, property managers, this is your opportunity to save big for your next project. Start saving up to 50% now. Go to thinkrealty.com/paint and then click discounts.
We're back with Think Realty Radio and your host and realty dealmaker, Abhi Golhar.
Think Realty Radio listeners, it's Abhi Golhar. We're back. My guest today is Marco Santorelli from NerradaRealEstate.com. We're talking about cash flow, we're talking about long distance investing, and we're talking about how you can pick your markets. Listen, as a long-distance investor, you really need to be 110% all in and convinced that your market makes the most sense. And there are so many factors you have to look at, you have to pay attention to. Marco, when I'm looking at all these factors, job growth, crime, school districts, et cetera, et cetera. Doesn't that lead to paralysis of analysis? Shouldn't I just dive in and say, hey, this is going to be a good market. I'm bullish on the United States of America. I'm bullish on the fact that we're going to be a powerhouse for the next 200 years. I'm going to go ahead and buy, and that's it.
Well, we should be bullish, generally speaking. And I'm very bullish on the country as a whole because we have a growing population. But we're talking over 400 metropolitan areas, so you still have to be able to decide how you're going to choose a market. How do you select a market? And there's really four things I look at when I, I'm choosing a market. I'm talking, at a macroeconomic level here. But let's just go through those four things here because I think we can, build the next segment or this segment with this stuff. And then just cut me off if you have any questions, Avi.
First thing here. I got you.
Yeah. So the first thing we kind of touched upon the first two, but let's define them. The first thing I want to see is a market being stable versus being a volatile market. Now that doesn't mean you can't invest in a volatile market. Just often what happens is you don't get the returns in a volatile market. And what I mean by that is that there are markets around the country that are what I refer to as linear and those that are cyclical. And all that means is that you see price changes either relatively smooth and steady, and if you look at a price chart over time or historically, you'll see that they don't appreciate or depreciate it too radically. It's more like a soft wave than a roller coaster, and those are linear markets, and those tend to be more stable. They're steady eddies. They're mm-hmm. tried and true. You can expect them to appreciate over time in lockstep with inflation. The cyclical markets are typically found on the coastal markets, and those are a little scarier for people because they're great when they appreciate rapidly, sometimes double digit, but they also tend to pull back or depreciate, and you see those as being very cyclical. They look more like a roller coaster. The problem with those markets, they're great if you can time it, if you know how to time it, and you're lucky enough to do it. And the problem is because they're so expensive and unaffordable, they don't really cash flow well. Their cap rates are very low. Sometimes they're negative cash flow. The down payments are very high. The downside risk is high because land values are so high. The land is actually worth more than the improvements on top of the lot. So your house may be worth X, but the land is worth a lot more than rebuilding the house. So that's what we see here in California. Now, I favor the stable markets, be it Birmingham or Memphis or Indianapolis. I like the stability of those markets. Number two, we want to see a diverse metropolitan area, meaning we have a diverse job market. There is breadth in the different industries within that market. That leads to a stable economy. If you are in a market that is heavily focused on technology or oil and gas or something like that, you can see an effect very rapidly should oil prices drop or the NASDAQ crash and tech jobs, are no longer abundant, meaning that there's a lot of layoffs. And, we've seen this in the past and, in 2000, 2001 with the NASDAQ crash. So you want metropolitan areas that have a diverse economy, a diverse job market. Number three, you want to see, and this is more of a litmus test because you want to apply what I'm about to tell you down on the property itself, the property level, not just on the market, but the market can be measured in terms of what I call a rent to value or rent to price ratio. I just simply refer to it as an RV ratio.
Okay.
And all that means is you're looking at the rent as a ratio of the purchase price or acquisition price. The quick example I always use is the $100,000 property that rents for $1,000 a month. That's a 1% rent to value ratio, 1,000 divided into the 100,000. It's a litmus test. That number will work well in markets where you have, a 0.8%, even 0.9%. The higher, the better. But again, this is just at a high level. It's just a quick snapshot of the market. The reason is because within every market, you're going to have areas and neighborhoods where that RV ratio is so low that it just makes no financial sense. And you'll also be able to go into areas where that RV ratio is so high that it's going to be an eye popper saying, wow, those numbers are incredible, but they happen to be bad areas of that market. So this is just a litmus test for the market itself. And then last but not least, you want to favor markets that are more landlord friendly. In other words, you want the laws to favor the landlord, not the laws favoring the tenants. And the reason for that is, this is kind of one that a lot of people don't think about much because they're so focused in investing in their own state, you know, be it, you know, New Jersey, New York, California, you know, a lot of these unfriendly states to us as real estate investors. And the reason this is important is because if and when the day comes where you have a tenant that becomes a problematic tenant, and this doesn't happen most of the time, and if you buy right, it probably won't ever happen. But let's just say it does happen where you have to get rid of a problem tenant or you have to have an eviction. It is good to know for you as a real estate investor that you're in a market where the laws are stacked in your favor. It's easy to issue the pay, you know, the pay or quit notice, get an eviction notice or a judgment from the court to evict that tenant and serve them so they move out in a timely manner by the end of the month. And if they don't, then, you know, there are repercussions where, you know, they can be forced out of the property. You know, there are states like Alabama that are very aggressive. I believe it's, I want to say Oklahoma, but, you know, those are certainly Alabama is one of the most aggressive states mm-hmm. in the country in terms of landlord laws. So those are the four things. You want a stable market, diverse metropolitan area, you know, with lots of jobs and diversity. You want a good rent-to-value ratio and then a landlord-friendly market. Those are the four key things that I look at before I go any further. Any questions about that?
No, I mean, I think a lot of this, too, it will take time, right? I think that's one of the biggest things to understand here. If I'm listening, identifying markets don't come easily. They will take time, and you have to gain your own comfortability. What Marco is doing is he's offering a framework, his framework on understanding markets. Now, you're going to consider this information. You'll use the majority of this information, and then you'll add in some more factors that you also deem worthy to consider. Now, the only thing that you have to pay attention to is execute. Once you feel good about a market, don't double guess yourself. Execute, get something, and learn as you go, especially if you're starting out for the first time. Right? What Marco mentioned in the factors he's considering, for example, job growth, for example, crime, for example, schools, I mean, infrastructure, building permits. These things are important because you need to make sure a city is expanding. You never want to put yourself in a position where, let's say, in the 90s, the city of Detroit was losing a really large percent of its population every single month, or excuse me, every single year. And there were still a lot of investors buying property in there in Detroit because they just didn't know any better. So if you don't look at what's going on, then it's not going to help you make any good buying decisions. It's like saying, I'm going to wait until the after Thanksgiving Day sales to buy. Absolutely, you should. That's a smart way to buy. You never want to buy completely at the top of the market without considering where the market is. All right, we got to go to break. We will talk more about what types of markets there are and, of course, choosing a neighborhood when we come back with Marco Santarelli from Narada Real Estate. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more Think Realty Radio with Avi Golhar after these messages.
Would you like to know the easiest way to create wealth and passive income with real estate? Now you can access the best deals without the stress or hassle of having to find, renovate, or manage them. Narada Real Estate Investments saves you time by providing you with professionally managed income properties in the best U.S. markets. Learn more at PassiveRealEstateGuide.com and download your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing. Simply visit PassiveRealEstateGuide.com.
Don't miss the Real Estate Note event of the year. The Paper Source Note Symposium is 3 days of learning and networking with the most experienced note investors on the planet. Discover how to buy non-performing and other real estate notes. meet keynote speaker Eddie Wilson, president of Think Realty Radio, at the Paper Source Note Symposium, April 11th through the 13th in Las Vegas. Visit papersourceseminars.com right now and enter the discount code ThinkRealty for $50 off your ticket. That's papersourceseminars.com.
Are you ready to build your legacy and work for yourself? NAP, the Note Assistance Program, is here to help you build your empire with mortgage note investing. Receive monthly inventory in your inbox, get access to top-notch online training, and participate in trusted transactions with vetted sellers and buyers. Join their community by visiting noteassistanceprogram.com now and register for one of their nationwide note labs or online training today.
Attention real estate investors. Join the nation's top pros in residential and commercial investing in Baltimore at the Think Realty Conference and Expo, April 6th and 7th. Network with industry leaders and service providers and learn how to earn a higher return on your real estate investments. The Think Realty Conference and Expo in Baltimore, April 6th and 7th. Text radio to 96270. That's radio to 96270. Or visit thinkrealty.com/Baltimore to register. We're back with Think Realty Radio and your host and realty dealmaker, Avi Goldhar.
We're back to the last segment of Think Realty Radio. I'm your host, Avi Goldhar. My guest today is Marco Santarelli from NaradaRealEstate.com. Now, Marco, we've talked a lot about the factors that you consider when selecting a market. That is incredible information. If you're just joining us and you missed it, visit thinkrealtyradio.com, type in Marco's name in the search bar, and you'll find the latest episode and the latest show that we've done with Marco, and click play. Now, you had mentioned before the show that there are different kinds of real estate markets. What do you mean by that?
Well, are you talking about the markets themselves specifically, or are you talking about more granular at the neighborhood level?
More granular at the neighborhood level.
Okay, so that's what I thought. We were talking about the markets. Okay, mm-hmm. So let's just say you've identified a market. Now what you want to do is you want to start looking at the submarkets or even neighborhoods, depending on the size of that overall market. When we talk about neighborhoods, Abhi, we kind of break them down into four general, you know, types or categories. Some people refer them as a class. Mm-hmm. You know, you can call it an A, B, C, and a D neighborhood. And if you want to throw an F in there, you could throw an F in there as a complete failure. But right. I relate D-class neighborhoods. I typically, you know, relate those to being war zones. You know, they're the worst of the worst neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what we, you know, what we buy ourselves here and what we, you know, what we offer to real estate investors, our clients that we work with, are typically in the B, B plus, and A minus range. However, if you think of it as a bell curve, there are still some A's and A pluses in there, and there are going to be some, you know, B minuses and C pluses. But let's talk about what that means, because there's no official industry definition of what it is. I mean, we all talk about it and we have a general idea of what we mean by a C-class neighborhood versus an A-class neighborhood. But here's how I define this. And this is good for people to know. And this is within the context of the 22 markets that we have investment or rental properties, turnkey rental properties in that our clients purchase through us. And I say it's within that context because I'm going to talk about prices here just as frames of reference. So let's talk about a C-class neighborhood. So with a C-class neighborhood, we're generally speaking of quote-unquote cheaper properties. Not cheap properties, but cheaper priced properties. And these are often under the $70,000, $75,000, maybe the $80,000 price range. Mm-hmm. So for us, these are properties that we would sell if we have them in the $60,000 to maybe $80,000 price range. But here's the thing to know about C's, and there's a reason I'm starting with C, not A, in this conversation. Mm-hmm. It's a good frame of reference. So C-class neighborhoods tend to have that higher RV or rent-to-value ratio. So when you look at those numbers, mm-hmm. True numbers, you know, you're going to see a 1% or higher rent-to-value ratio, and those look very attractive. So when you look at the numbers on paper, they look great. You know, it's like, wow, that's generating a good capitalization rate. It's generating a good cash on cash return. And for the most part, those are almost always true, those statements. However, and this is a lot a lot of this, what I'm going to say is anecdotally speaking, but you can talk to a lot of investors and they will tell you this. What you find, because of the demographic or the tenant class of people in C-class neighborhoods, not that it's good or bad here nor there, you generally speaking will have higher turnover and higher vacancy. And that's not what you want, because vacancies and turnovers are expensive. And that's what tends to eat up your cash flow from the year, is when you have that turnover during the year. Now, of course, you budget for vacancy, but if it's more frequent than normal, or it's a costly turnover, that's what tends to eat into your immediate rate of return, like your cash on cash. So hopefully that doesn't sound too complicated or too technical. The point is this, that anecdotally speaking, C-class neighborhoods have higher turnovers and higher vacancies. And last but not least, you tend to have financing issues. Why? Because number one, there are not a lot of sales comps. And number two, most lenders, virtually all of them, but most lenders do not lend on properties that are that inexpensive or that cheap, because they don't want to do $50,000 loans. They want to be doing $100,000 plus loans. So that's a C-class neighborhood. Any questions about that, or I'll just keep rolling on?
I was going to ask about the 1% rule. So this is where a lot of investors will say, hold on, Marco, there's a 1%, there's a 2%. Some people even have a 2.5% rule. What's realistic here? Should I be looking at a 2% rule? And maybe you can define this for our listeners as well, those that are like, what are you even talking about?
Yeah, so when we're talking about the 1% rule, generally that applies to properties that are either turnkey, completely turnkey, like what we offer, or they are what I'll define as rent ready, meaning that they may not be completely turnkey. There may be some deferred maintenance or a lot of the things in the property are not necessarily new or new as in within the last year. So they're rentable, they're livable, maybe safe, clean, and functional, but they're good enough to give you that 1%, 0.9%, 1.1%, depending on the neighborhood. 2% is not possible, even in C-class neighborhoods on a turnkey rental, is hard to achieve. Mm-hmm. Where that 2% rule comes from is people who are not passive but active real estate investors, and they're finding a distressed property and buying it at a cheap enough price where they get the discount that after they do their renovations, they are into that property at a low enough cost basis where they now have a good chunk of equity in there, because it's value add. They forced the equity. They've built the equity into it. So their cost basis is low, and they're able to rent it at a number that is now far above 1%. That's how people get that 2%, is they're basically rolling up their sleeves and getting into creating a rental where they're into it for a low enough basis that the rent is just so much more than that 1%.
And that number has been decreasing over time, right? So a lot of investors will also be concerned and say, well, I used to be able to get properties that fulfilled the 2% rule, but now I have to sacrifice and get a 1%. Are they really sacrificing, though, or is that 1% rule the more stable, the better value, because you know you're not getting a C property, you're getting more of a B, B plus property, but you'll have more of a stable tenant, and it's worth it to hit a 1% rule instead of the riskier two?
Well, there's kind of a two-part answer to that. Since 2012, we've seen those numbers drop. Like everything else being equal, yes, those numbers have been sliding across the country, virtually in every market and every neighborhood. But that's the reason why we are market agnostic. We are not married to a market or a suburb or a neighborhood or a provider or anything for that matter. We have to be nimble, because when we see a market, like we used to be in Las Vegas and Phoenix and for the most part, Dallas, we're still in Dallas, but we've had to move to different areas within Dallas. Mm-hmm. But when we're in a market and we see the numbers change, then guess what? We have to look harder, dig deeper, or move to another market. And that's exactly what we do every single year. We introduce new markets, more markets, just to provide those returns and opportunities. So the numbers, like I said before, the numbers are constantly changing, because nothing is in a state of balance. There's no equilibrium. We just have to pick new markets, other markets, better markets, and change, you know, not the neighborhood grade that we're in, but the neighborhood that we are offering property in order to provide those returns.
We got to wrap up here. Where do you think I should be as a single family rental investor in 2019? What do you think the goal should be? There's a lot of talk about we're in a 13-year cycle now, and we're approaching the end, and we should be expecting a recession or some type of major correction. Generally, how do you feel, and what actions do you think new investors should take with that media attention on the housing market in more of a downward fashion?
Yeah, so I probably don't have the amount of time I'd like to answer this question fully.
20 seconds.
20 seconds, yeah. Well, we will have to do B and C, B and A neighborhoods another day. Basically this, there's always opportunities out there. You just have to have the right team to work with, and you have to just move, like I said, be market agnostic. Don't be married to your backyard. Find markets that make sense, where the numbers make sense and everything else makes sense. And then find the deals in the right neighborhoods and work with your team to build it out.
And that's what you've done at NaradaRealEstate.com. Marco, thank you so much for joining me on Think Realty Radio. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Think Realty Nation, we got to go to the next show. I was going to say we got to go to break, but no, that's the end of the show. My time here is up, but I'll be with you tomorrow. Have an awesome day. Have questions, go to ThinkRealtyRadio.com. And until next time, happy investing.
The show is over, but Abhi's expertise is available for you 24/7 at thinkrealtyradio.com. Videos, articles, podcasts, insights, everything you need to create more for your future right at your fingertips. Think Realty Radio, a real estate of mind, online at thinkrealtyradio.com.